Chapter 35. The Importance of Dialin. "They want safe conduct?" Elaine said incredulously. "To enter Camelin?" Lightning flashed outside the windows, and thunder boomed. Outside, a deluge fell on Camelin, a hammering downpour. The sun must have been well above the horizon, but the stand lamps were lit against twilight darkness. The slender young man standing in front of her low-backed chair colored with embarrassment, yet he continued to look her in the eye. He was little more than a boy, really, his smooth cheeks likely shaved as much for form as because he needed a razor very often. Very properly, Hansel Renshaw, Arathella's grandson, wore neither sword nor armor, but the marks of breastplate straps remained on his green coat, imprinted by long wear. A large damp spot on his left shoulder showed where his cloak had leaked through. Odd, the things you noticed at times like this.
"I was instructed to ask for it, my lady," he said, his voice steady.
Dialin, arms folded beneath her breasts, grunted sourly. She was not far from scowling. Mistress Harfour, resplendent as always in her crimson tabard, with the white lion spotless on her formidable bosom, sniffed audibly. Hansel colored again. They were in Elaine's smaller sitting room, where a small fire on the marble hearth took away most of the morning's chill, and lamp oil scented the air with roses. She wished Birgitta was there. From the mild irritation flowing through the bond, she was dealing with reports. Her annoyance was not great enough for it to be anything more urgent. The arrival of Luan and the others below the city 2 days ago with their 60,000 armsmen had occasioned more than a little excitement, and impromptu celebrations in the streets by the citizens, once it became clear they were not going to occupy the camps abandoned when Jared Sarand left. Taking with him men from houses that now sided with Elaine, though they could not know it yet. The light only knew what trouble that bloody man was going to cause. But Hansel's message put a new complexion on the huge encampment just a mile south of Low Camelin. If Arathella, Luan, and the others knew about the city being supplied from Tyr and Ilion through gateways, and surely everyone in Andor knew by this time, perhaps they had decided a siege would accomplish nothing. Safe conduct was a matter of battle lines. Perhaps they intended to call for Camelin's surrender to avoid a grand assault. The proclamations of support, carried by kinswomen rather than riders, had been posted from Arangil to the mining villages in the Mountains of Mist, or soon would be. But even with Sumiko and other kinswomen wearing themselves out in healing, the armsmen of Cairn, Anshar, and Baran, who had not been carried off by Jared, did not bring her numbers anywhere near 60,000. Small bands of armsmen were beginning to flow into the city as word spread that it was safe to approach Camelin, but not enough yet. It might be a week or more before sizable parties appeared. Those had been staying clear of the city for fear of Aramilla's army. The outcome of a massive assault was not a foregone conclusion. Men atop a wall had considerable advantage over those trying to scale it, but it would be a near-run thing at best, and no hope for more help soon. Dialin had paid another visit to Danine Kandreid in the west, but the woman still dithered. Elaine had 9 houses where she needed 10. Everything hung in the balance, and Danine could not bloody decide whether or not to stand for Trakand. "Why do they wish to speak with me?" She managed to keep Birgitta's irritation from tinging her voice. Birgitta's and her own. Hansel reddened yet again. He seemed to do that easily. Burn her, they truly had sent a boy.
"I was not informed, my lady. I was simply told to ask for safe conduct."
He hesitated.
"They will not enter Camelin without it, my lady."
Rising, she went to her writing desk, removed a smooth sheet of good white paper from the rosewood paper box, and dipped a pen in the silver-mounted crystal ink jar. Precise letters flowed onto the page without her usual flourishes. She was short and to the point. "Lord Luan Norwellan, Lady Arathella Renshaw, Lord Pellavar Coelan, Lady Aemlyn Carand, Lady Elorian Tremaine, and Lord Abella Pendar may feel safe in entering Camelin and be assured that they and their retinues may depart the city at any time they wish. I will receive them informally this afternoon in the Grand Hall as befits their stations. We must speak of the Borderlanders. Elaine Trakand, daughter heir of Andor. High seat of House Trakand." She tried to maintain calm, but the steel nib dug into the paper with the last letters. Safe conduct. She channeled the ceiling candle alight, and her hand trembled as she dribbled golden-yellow wax onto the page. They implied she would try to hold them by force. No, more than implied. They as good as said it. She pressed her seal, a blossoming lily, into the wax as if trying to drive it through the tabletop. Here, she said, handing the sheet to the young man. Her voice was ice, and she made no effort to warm it. If this fails to make them feel safe, perhaps they might try wrapping themselves in swaddling. Thunder boomed for punctuation. He colored once more, this time plainly in anger, but wisely confined himself to offering thanks as he folded the page. He was carefully tucking it inside his coat when Mistress Harfour showed him out. She would escort him to his horse personally. A messenger from nobles as powerful as Luan and the others had to be given a certain level of honor. Suddenly Elaine's anger turned to sadness. She could not have said what she was sad over. Her moods often seemed to change without cause, perhaps for all those who had died and all those who would. "Are you certain you don't want to be queen, Dialin? Luan and that lot would stand for you in a heartbeat, and if I stand for you, those who've stood for me will stand with me. Burn me, Dunin would probably stand for you." Dialin took a chair, spreading her blue skirts carefully before answering. "I'm absolutely certain. Running my own house is work enough for me without adding all of Andor to it. Besides, I disapprove of the throne changing houses without good cause. The lack of a daughter heir, or worse, one who's a fool or incompetent, cruel or greedy. You're none of those things. Continuity provides stability, and stability brings prosperity." She nodded. She liked that turn of phrase. "Mind, had you died before returning to Camelin and making your claim, I would have entered my own. But the simple truth is, you'll make a better ruler than I would. Better for Andor. In part, that's because of your connection to the Dragon Reborn." Dialin's raised eyebrow invited Elaine to expound on that connection. "But in large part," she went on when Elaine said nothing, "it's you yourself. I watched you grow up, and by the time you were 15 I knew you'd be a good queen, perhaps as good as Andor has ever had." Elaine's face grew hot, and tears welled in her eyes. Burn her bouncing moods! Only she knew she could not blame her pregnancy this time. Praise from Dialin was like praise from her mother, never grudging, but never given unless she felt it was deserved. Her morning was busy, and she had only Camelin and the palace to deal with rather than all of Andor. Mistress Harfour reported that the spies in the palace who could be confirmed as reporting to Aramilla or her allies had grown very quiet and still, like mice that feared a cat might be watching. "At least it's safe to dismiss them now, my lady," Rena said in tones of great satisfaction. She disliked having spies in the royal palace as much as Elaine did, perhaps more. Daughter heir or queen might live in the palace, but in the First Maid's eyes, it belonged to her. All of them. Spies for others had been left in place so that no one would suspect that Rena knew. "Keep them all on and continue to watch them," Elaine told her. "They're the most likely to take coin from someone else, and we know who they are." A spy who was known could be kept from learning anything they should not, and you could make sure they learned exactly what you wanted them to. That went for the Aja eyes and ears Mistress Harfour had uncovered, too. The Ajas had no right to spy on her, and if she occasionally spoon-fed them false information, it would be their own fault if they acted on it. She could not do that too often, or they would realize she had uncovered their spies, but she could at need. "As you say, my lady, the world has changed, hasn't it?" "I'm afraid it has, Mistress Harfour." The round woman nodded sadly, but she quickly returned to business. "One of the windows in the Grand Hall has developed a leak, my lady. I'd have seen to anything minor without bothering you, but this is a crack in the glass, which means calling in..." The list of problems that needed Elaine's approval and papers that needed her signature went on. Master Nari reported on wagon loads of grain and beans and trade goods in that dusty voice of his, and announced with some surprise that the number of arsons had not decreased. 17 buildings had burned in the night. He had been sure the capture of Aramilla would see an end to that, and he was rueful over being wrong. He brought death warrants in the names of Rhys Ab Alaman and Aldred Gomaison for her to sign and seal. Mercenaries who turned their colors could expect no more unless their new masters prevailed. Everard Cordwyn had died at the gate, or he would have gone to the gallows too. Hafin Bakovan had sent a petition asking a reward for his actions at the Farmadding gate, yet that was easy enough to reject. The presence of the Damani mercenary and his men might well have been the difference in the gate holding until Dailan arrived, but they had been earning their pay, no more.
"The prisoners are still being close-mouthed, I fear," Nori said, sliding the refused petition back into his leather folder. He seemed to feel that if he did that quickly enough, it was the same as never having removed it.
"The Dark Friend Aes Sedai, I mean, my lady. And the other two. Very close-mouthed, except for, invective. Melar is the worst with that, shouting about what he intends to do to the women who arrested him."
Denny had taken her instructions literally. The guardswomen had pummeled Melar severely, leaving him a mass of bruises from head to foot.
"But the Aes Sedai can be quite, vituperative as well. I fear it may be necessary to put them to the question if we hope to learn anything useful."
"Don't call them Aes Sedai," she snapped.
Hearing Aes Sedai linked with Dark Friend made her stomach writhe. "Those women have given up any right to be called Aes Sedai." She had taken their great serpent rings herself and had them melted down. That was Egwene's prerogative, not hers, and she might well be reprimanded for it, but she could not restrain herself. "Ask the Lady Sylvaes for the use of her secretary." She had no questioners among her people, and according to Avienda, an unskilled questioner was likely to kill the one being put unsuccessfully to the question. When was her sister going to be allowed to visit? Light she missed Avienda.
"I suspect he's no such thing."
Lightning lit up the windows of the sitting room, the glassed casements rattling with the boom of its thunder. Nori pressed his fingertips together, holding the folder against his ink-stained tabard with the heels of his hands and frowning gravely.
"Few people keep a private questioner, my lady. It suggests, a dark side. But then, as I understand matters, her grandfather chased away every man who showed interest in her until men stopped showing interest, and she has been virtually a prisoner since reaching her majority. That would tend to give anyone a dark view of the world. She may not, be as trustworthy as you could wish, my lady."
"Do you think you can bribe some of her servants to be my eyes and ears?" How easy it was to ask that. Spies had become a part of her life, as much as masons or glaziers.
"That should be possible, my lady. I will know for certain in a day or two."
Once he would have been horrified by the very idea of having anything to do with spying. All things changed eventually, it seemed. His hands shifted on the folder, almost but not quite opening it.
"I fear the sewers in the southern part of the new city need attention urgently."
Elaine sighed. Not everything changed. Burn her. Once she did have all of Andor, she suspected she would seldom have an hour to herself. What did Luon and the others want? Not long after mid-morning, Melfane Dawlish appeared and had Asanda and Nerys strip Elaine to the skin so she could be weighed in a huge wooden-armed balance scale the midwife had brought along, a daily ritual. The brass pan was padded with a blanket, thank the light. The stout little woman listened to her heart through a hollow wooden tube pressed to her chest and back, thumbed back her eyelids to examine her eyes, and smelled her breath. She had Elaine make water, then held the glass jar up to the light of a stand lamp to study it. She smelled that, too, and even dipped a finger in and licked it. It was another daily ritual. Elaine averted her eyes, pulling her flower-embroidered silk robe tight around her, but she still shuddered. This time Melfane noticed.
"I can tell some sickness from changes in the taste, my lady. Anyway, there's worse things. My boy Jame, the one who carried the scale for me, his first paid job of work was mucking out in a stable. He claimed everything he ate tasted like..."
Her round belly shook with laughter.
"Well, you can imagine, my lady."
Elaine could, and was glad she was not prone to nausea. She shuddered again, anyway. Asanda seemed quite composed, hands folded at her waist and watching her niece with approval, but Nerys looked about to sick up.
Pity he can't learn my craft, but no one would buy herbs from a man, or have a man midwife.
Melfane laughed uproariously at that ridiculous notion.
Wants to be apprentice to an armorer, of all things. Old for it, but there it is. Now you be sure to read to your babe.
She was more than doubtful of Elaine's claim that she would have a boy and a girl. She would not accept it until she could hear their heartbeats, and that would be some few weeks yet.
And have musicians play for her. She'll learn the sound of your voice. Learn to like reading and music, too. It helps in other ways, besides. Makes the child brighter.
You say that every time, Mistress Dawlish, Elaine said peevishly. I can remember, you know, and I am doing it.
Melfane laughed again, a twinkle in her dark eyes. She accepted Elaine's bouncing moods the way she accepted the rain and lightning.
You'd be surprised how many don't believe a babe in the womb can hear, but I can see the difference in those who get read to and those who don't. Do you mind if I have a few words with my aunt before I go, my lady? I brought her a pie and an ointment for her joints.
Asanda's face reddened.
Well, now that her lie was exposed, she would accept healing, or Elaine would know the reason why.
At the end of the midday meal, Elaine brought up the intentions of Luan and the others with Birgitta. It was a wonderful meal, and she ate ravenously. Melfane had lambasted the cooks and every other woman in earshot for the bland diet they had been feeding her. Today there were small pond trout grilled to perfection, cabbage rolls stuffed with crumbly white ewe's milk cheese, broad beans with pine nuts and a tangy apple tart. Another reason it was marvelous was that nothing had the faintest hint of spoiling. To drink, there was good black tea with mint that made her tense for a moment until she realized it really was mint. The only thing Melfane had forbidden was wine, however well watered. Birgitta had even given up drinking herself, though it seemed impossible it could have any effect through the bond. Elaine refrained from pointing that out. Birgitta had been drinking too much to dull the pain of losing her guidel. Elaine understood, even if she did not approve. She could not imagine what she would do if Rand died.
I don't know, Birgitta said after wolfing down the last of her tart. My best guess is they've come to ask you to help them move against the Borderlanders. The one bloody thing that's sure is that they didn't bloody come to throw their support to you.
That's my best guess, too.
Elaine picked up crumbs of cheese with a damp fingertip and popped them into her mouth. She could have eaten as much again as had been on her plate, but Melfane had announced her strict intention to limit her weight gain. Just enough and not too much. Perhaps a cow being fattened for market felt like this.
Unless they're going to demand I surrender Camelin.
There's always that, Birgitta said, sounding almost cheerful.
The bond said she was anything but.
We still have watchers in the towers, though, and Julania and Karyla have gotten work as laundresses in their camp, so we'll know if they begin to move against the city before the first man sets out.
Elaine wished she did not sigh so often.
Burn her, she had Aramilla, Nayan, and Elania under guard and definitely not enjoying sharing a bed. She knew the thought should not give her pleasure, but it did. And she had gained 3 more allies, if not necessarily the most solid. At least they were tied to her inextricably now. She should have been feeling triumphant. That afternoon, Asanda and Stephanie dressed her in dark green slashed with emerald on the skirts and embroidered with silver across the bosom, down the sleeves and around the hem. For jewelry, she wore her great serpent ring and a large silver pin enameled blue, except for the shape of Trakan's keystone. The pin made her morose. Inside the house it was said that Trakand was the keystone that held Andor together. She had not done a very good job of it so far. She and Birgitta took turns reading aloud to her babes. From histories, of course. If Melfane was right, she did not want to direct them to frivolous tales. Dry stuff it was. A plump man in red and white played the flute, while a lean woman in livery played the 12-string bittern, producing lively, joyous tunes, at least when crashes of thunder did not drown them out. Bards did not grow on trees, and Birgitta had been uncertain about allowing anyone from outside the palace near Elaine, but Mistress Harfour had found a number of accomplished musicians who had leapt at the chance to put on livery. Their pay was considerably better in the palace than in a common room, and their clothing was provided with it. Elaine thought of trying to hire a gleeman, but that made her think of Tom. Was he dry? Was he even alive? All she could do was pray. The lights send it so. Please. Mistress Harfour came to announce the arrival of Luan, Arathella, and the others, and Elaine donned the coronet of the daughter heir, a simple gold band that held a single golden rose surrounded by thorns above her brows. Casela, along with 8 guardswomen, fell in behind her, Birgitta and Asanda, as they left her apartments, boots thudding loudly on the floor tiles in step. 9 guardswomen had been among the dead when she was rescued from the Dark Friends, and that seemed to have bonded the others together even more tightly. They got lost twice, finding their way to the Grand Hall, but no one so much as murmured. What were shifting corridors when you had faced power-wrought fire and lightning? The great arch doors of the Grand Hall, carved with tall lions on both sides, stood open, and Casela took the guardswomen to stand in front of them, while she, Birgitta, and Asanda went in. The tall windows in the walls were dark with rain, except when lightning flashed, but the mirrored stand lamps against the walls and around the white columns that marched in rows along the sides of the chamber were all lit. A loud, steady plunk, plunk, plunk echoed in the vast space, drops falling into a prosaic wooden bucket standing beneath one of the colored windows set in the ceiling 20 paces overhead, where one of the rearing white lions had beads of water glistening along a crack, near scenes of battle and the faces of Andor's earliest queens. As always in this hall, Elaine felt those women judging her as she crossed the red and white floor tiles. They had built Andor with the sharpness of their minds and the blood of their sons and husbands, beginning with a single city and molding a strong nation out of the rubble of Arthur Hawkwing's empire. They had a right to judge any woman who sat on the Lion Throne. She suspected their visages had been placed there so every queen would feel her actions judged by history. The throne itself sat atop a white marble dais at the far end of the chamber, carved and gilded and sized for a woman, yet massive on its lion-pawed legs. The white lion, formed from moonstones set in a field of glittering rubies on its tall back, would stand above the head of the tallest woman who sat on that throne. Dailin was already standing at the foot of the dais's steps, watching Sylvais converse with Conail and Catelyn, while Branlett and Perival listened closely. Perival raked his fingers through his hair and nodded. Did Dailin have questions about Sylvais too? Lear and Karin stood apart from the rest, and apart from each other as well. Neither even glanced at the other. Having been allies against Elaine, they would not want her to think they were allied still. Asanda went to join the serving men and women in the liveries of the 8 other houses, gathered around a table that held tall silver pitchers of wine and tea. That was what informal meant in this context. Each of them would bring a single servant in attendance. For a formal meeting, Elaine would have provided all of the servants, and the Grand Hall would have been crowded with every noble in Camelon, every noble from the encampment below Camelon. "Elorian may well be provocative, Elaine," Dailin said for about the 5th time since hearing of the safe conduct request. Her face was cool and calm, yet she must have been feeling her nerves. Her hands smoothed unnecessarily at her gold-embroidered skirts. "I won't let her provoke me," Elaine replied. "Neither will anyone else. I mean you, Conail, and you, Lear." Conail, in gold-worked blue, colored as quickly as Hansel had. He had gotten into a fight with a mercenary he thought had spoken disparagingly of Elaine and had almost killed the man. It was well for him the other man had begun drawing his sword first. Even mercenaries deserved justice, and Andor was not Tyr, where nobles could kill commoners with impunity. Well, before Rand changed so many of their laws. Burn him, why was he leaping about so?
"I stood for you, Elaine, and that means I always stand up for you," Lear said smoothly.
He looked every inch the self-confident courtier in silver-embroidered green silk with House Barin's silver-winged hammer on the collar, yet he was too smooth by half, Lear was.
"But I'll hold my temper, whatever Elorian says."
The bond surged with fleeting contempt. Trying to demonstrate how loyal he was to Elaine, Lear had fought with mercenaries 3 times. In 2 days. The man had to have been searching for fights to manage that.
"If she tries to goad us, why should we bite our tongues?" Catalin demanded.
Her red dress, embroidered with broad bands of gold at the hem and on the sleeves, did not suit her coloring, especially when her plump cheeks were crimson with anger. Her chin was raised. Perhaps she wore that large enameled pin bearing Haven's blue bear where she did, so she would be forced to keep her chin high and look down her nose at everyone.
"I've never allowed anyone to poke at me and walk away unscathed."
"An ox responds to the goad and does as the ox herd wants," Dylan said dryly. "The same way you will be doing what Elorian wants if you respond to her goads."
The crimson remained in Catalin's cheeks, no doubt from embarrassment now. Rena Harfor appeared in the doorway.
"My ladies," she said loudly,
her voice echoing in the nearly empty chamber.
"My lords."
This was informality, when 2 sides met, and there was no knowing how far apart they were. Mistress Harfor announced the newly arrived lords and ladies in strict order of precedence, though among the houses gathered here there was not a great deal between them. Luan Norwellen, hard-faced and more gray-haired than when Elaine last saw him, his blue coat undecorated except for Norwellen's silver salmon on the high collar. Arathella Renshar, her face creased and her brown hair thick with gray, in a red riding dress ornately worked with gold and a large ruby-studded pin that displayed the 3 golden hounds. Pellavar Coelan, tall and lean, his dark hair receding till he almost looked as if he had shaved the front of his head like a Kyrianon, in silver-embroidered blue with twinned red roses worked on his collar, the roses of Coelan. Aemlyn Carand, plump in grey silk, with the 3 golden arrows climbing her sleeves, and so thick on her bosom she looked like a bristling quiver. Elorian Tremaine, not so plump as Elaine recalled, but still pretty in green-slashed blue embroidered with golden-antlered white stags, the white stag of Tremaine on the sleeves. Abella Pendar, his angular face stern beneath grey hair, in dark grey with the 3 golden stars on his collar. They walked up the grand hall together, trailed by their servants, but not grouped as announced. Elorian and Abella walked with Luan, Pellavar and Aemlyn with Arathella, 2 paces between the groups. So, they asked for safe conduct as one, yet they were not one. That made a demand for surrender a little less likely. Even open enemies could act in concert at times. Divided skirts and snug breeches glistened damply. The finest cloak could not protect a person completely in a downpour like this. They would not be in their best tempers. "Be welcome," she told them as their servants peeled away to join the others. "Will you take wine or tea? The wine is hot and spiced. This seems a wintry day for spring." Luan opened his mouth, but Elorian spoke first. "At least you're not sitting on the throne." Her face might have been carved from marble, and her voice was that hard and cold. "I half expected you to be." Thunder rolled overhead. Luan looked pained. Arathella rolled her eyes as if she were hearing something she had heard all too often before. Lear stirred, but Elaine fixed him with a steady look, and he gave a small apologetic bow. "I have no right to sit on the throne, Elorian," she replied calmly. "Light, please let her mood hold steady now."
"Yet."
There was an unintended touch of bite in that. Perhaps she was not so calm as she wished to be. Elorian sneered.
"If you're waiting for Daneen to make your 10, you'll have a long wait. Daneen spent the last 6 sessions visiting her manors. She never declared for anyone."
Elaine smiled, but it was difficult. A succession was when one house succeeded another on the throne. "I will have tea." Elorian blinked, but it sparked the others to announce what they would take. Only Elaine, Birgitta, Branlet, and Perival took tea. Everyone sniffed at their cups, whether silver cups of wine or porcelain teacups, before taking a sip. Elaine felt no insult. Food and wine could be fine in the kitchens, and tainted by the time it reached the table. There was never any telling where or when spoilage would strike. The tea had a faint tang of ginger, but not enough to overwhelm the taste of good Tremulking black.
"I see you've gathered most of your support among the children and Aramilla's leavings," Elorian said.
Catalin turned as red as her dress, and Branlett straightened angrily until Perivale put a hand on his arm and shook his head. A level-headed boy, Perivale, and bright beyond his years.
Lear managed to restrain himself this time, but Conail started to say something sharp before Elaine's firm look snapped his teeth shut.
Carind merely returned Elorian's spiteful stare stolidly. Carind was not very intelligent, but little ruffled her.
"You must have had a reason for asking this meeting," Elaine said. "If it was merely to offer insults..."
She let that trail off. She had her own reasons for wanting this meeting. If they had asked for her to come to them, she would have, without asking for safe conduct.
Feeling a pulse of anger through the bond, she took a firm rein on hers. Birgitta wore a scowl directed at Elorian like a dagger. If they began feeding one another's temper, that did not bear thinking about, not here, not now.
Elorian opened her mouth again, and this time Luon cut her off.
"We've come to ask for a truce, Elaine."
A flash of lightning lit the northern windows and those in the ceiling, but the interval to thunder said it had been some distance off.
"A truce? Are we at war, Luon? Has someone declared for the throne that I haven't heard of?"
Six sets of eyes swung to Dialin, who grunted.
"Fools! I told you, and you wouldn't believe me. Perhaps you'll believe this. When Sylvaes, Carind, and Lear sent their proclamations of support, I sent my own. Taravin stands for Trakand, and the whole of Andor will know it soon enough."
Elorian colored angrily and managed to make even that seem cold. Aemlyn took a long drink, looking thoughtful. Arathella allowed a touch of disappointment to touch her face before it returned to a mask nearly as hard as Elorian's.
"Be that as it may," Luon said, "we still want, if not a truce, then a temporary agreement."
He drank a small swallow from his wine cup and shook his head sadly.
"Even gathering everything we can, we'll have a difficult time defeating the Borderlanders. But if we fail to act together, they'll carve up Andor once they decide to move. Frankly, I'm surprised they've remained in one place this long. Their men ought to be well rested by now, even after a 1,000-league march."
Lightning lit the southern windows brightly, and thunder crashed so loudly it seemed the glass panes should shiver. Close, that one.
"I expected them to be in Temurundi by now myself," Elaine said. "But I believe their reason for sitting in one place is a fear of sparking a war if they come too near Camelin. They seem to be trying to find a way to Murundi using country roads. You know what condition those are in this time of year. They want no war with us. When I gave them permission to cross Andor, they told me they were looking for the dragon reborn."
Elorian spluttered, and chips of ice should have come from her mouth.
"When you what? You prate of how you have no right to sit on the throne, yet? And then you arrogate to yourself the right of
an Aes Sedai, Elorian." Elaine held up her right hand so they could not miss the golden great serpent encircling the third finger. Her own voice was frosty despite all she could do.
"I did not speak as daughter, heir, or even high seat of House Trakand. I spoke as Elaine Aes Sedai of the Green Aja. Had I not, they would have come anyway. They were very short of food and fodder. Had I tried to stop them, had anyone tried to stop them, there would have been war. They are determined to find the dragon reborn. It would have been a war Andor had faint chance of winning. You speak of acting together, Luon? Gather all of Andor's strength, and we could nearly match their numbers. But 2 in 3 of ours would be men who can handle a halberd or spear but spend most of their days behind a plow. Every man of theirs is a long-serving armsman who would not be surprised to face Trollocs any day of his life. Instead of a war that would soak Andor in blood and cripple her for a generation, we have the Borderlanders crossing our nation peacefully. I have them watched. They pay for the food and fodder they need, and pay well.
Another time, with other listeners, she would have laughed over that. Andoran farmers would try to pry high prices out of the Dark One. The worst they've done is flog a few horse thieves, and if they should have been handed over to a magistrate, I can't fault the Borderlanders far for it. Now tell me, Elorian, what would you have done differently, and how?
Elorian blinked, icily sullen, then sniffed dismissively and sipped at her wine.
"And what do you plan for this Black Tower?" Abella asked quietly. "I suspect you have a plan for them, too."
Did he suspect her other reason for letting the Borderlanders cross Andor? Let him, so long as he did not give it voice. So long as he kept silent, her motive seemed purely for Andor's good. That was hypocritical, no bones about it, but realistic as well. She had spoken truthfully concerning her other reasons, but that one, spoken aloud, could cost her. She still needed one more house, and it looked as if Candreid had to be it, but Danine would never move if she thought Elaine was trying to force her into it. "Nothing," she told him. "I send guardsmen periodically to ride around the Black Tower grounds and remind them they are in Andor and subject to Andor's laws, but aside from that, I can do no more than I could if the White Tower were somehow transported to Caemlyn." For a long moment they stared at her, all six of them, unblinking.
"Pendar stands for Trakand," Abella said suddenly, and right atop him, Luan said, "Norwellen stands for Trakand."
Lightning flashed overhead, brightening the colored windows in the ceiling. Elaine kept herself from swaying with an effort. Birgitta's face was smooth, but the bond carried amazement. It was done. She had 11, and the throne was hers. "The more who stand for her, the better for Andor," Dialin sounded a touch dazed herself. "Stand with me for Trakand." There was another pause, longer, full of exchanged glances, but then, one by one, Arathella, Pellavar, and Aemlyn announced that their houses stood for Trakand. Doing so for Dialin, though. Elaine would have to remember that. Perhaps she could win their loyalty in time, but for the present they supported her for Dialin's sake.
"She has the throne," Elorian said, as cold as ever. "The rest is fluff and feathers."
Elaine tried to make her voice warm. "Will you dine with us this evening, Elorian? At least remain until the rain abates."
"I have my own cooks," Elorian replied, turning away toward the doors. Her serving woman came running to take her cup and return it to the table. "As soon as the rain stops, I will be leaving for Sheldon. I've been away too long."
"Tarman Gaiden is coming soon, Elorian," Elaine said. "You won't be able to remain on your estates then." Elorian paused, looking over her shoulder.
"When Tarman Gaiden comes, Tremaine rides for the last battle, and we ride behind the Lion of Andor."
Thunder boomed as she strode out of the grand hall with her serving woman at her heels.
"Will you all join me in my apartments?" Elaine asked the others. Behind the Lion of Andor, but not a word about behind Elaine Trakand. Nearly half her support was suspect one way or another. Jared Sarand was still on the loose with a not inconsiderable force, and she would have trouble from Elorian eventually. It was never this way in stories. In stories, everything was always wrapped up neatly by the end. Real life was much messier. Still, she had the throne at last. There was still the coronation, but that was a formality now. As she led the procession from the grand hall, chatting with Luan and Pellavar, thunder rolled overhead like martial drums beating the march for Tarman Gaiden. How long before Andor's banners had to march to the last battle?